Don't turn it off now. You need this stuff. Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network.
It's time for FLA Law, brought to you by the personal injury attorneys of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes. This hour will be informative, along with taking your questions and comments. Now, here are your hosts for today's show.
Good evening. It is Tuesday, and that means that you are listening to FLA Law on the radio. My name is Matthew Noyce, and I'm one of the partners here at the law firm of Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce, the longest established personal injury law firm in Tampa Bay. We have been helping people after personal injury matters since 1955. We continue that pursuit to be involved in the community by sponsoring this show every week. And it's a live call-in talk show, so we're here to answer questions that you have regarding the law. As I mentioned, we do personal injury. That means car accidents, slip and falls, malpractice, but also workers' compensation law and Social Security disability. But we can answer other areas of law. But I'm not alone. I have my partner, Brian Caulfield, here with me as well. Brian, thanks for co-hosting with us today.
Always great to be here with you, Matt, and the law office is open for the next 1 hour. We're going to be answering questions live on the air.
Yes, and the best thing to do is to call now if you have questions, because oftentimes they wait till the end of the show, and then it's just a little too late to take the call. So if you do have questions, the number is 727-441-3000. We are also live on our YouTube channel, also live on Facebook, live on the firm's Facebook page at Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce Injury Lawyers. You can see Brian and I doing the show, and you can type in your questions right on Facebook, and I can address those questions for you if you don't want to have your voice on the radio. But Brian and I are here. We're here to answer any questions you have. Brian is a board-certified civil trial attorney. He and I have been working together, for about 34 years now. It's hard to believe it's been that long, but it's been a wonderful ride. But Brian, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your tenure at Peronic, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce?
Yeah, I graduated from Stetson University College of Law way back in 1988, and the very first job I took was while I was in school. I was actually a law clerk here at the firm doing research and writing while I was winding my way through law school. Upon graduation, I joined the firm in 1988 and then became a partner in 1991. So I have been at the firm about 35 years, and my practice is all personal injury, wrongful death, and medical malpractice, do some workers' comp as well. But primarily what I do is auto accidents, motorcycle accidents, slip and fall, trip and fall, and medical malpractice type cases.
And you're a trial attorney.
Yep.
What's the difference between a trial attorney and some of those attorneys that people may have to experience after a car accident that they may not know really aren't trial attorneys?
Yeah, well, you know, the definition of trial attorney really is kind of fluid. You know, a lot of lawyers call themselves trial lawyers, but they don't actually go to trial. So one of the ways you can assure yourself that you have a lawyer that has actual experience in going to trial is you look for a board-certified civil trial lawyer. Those lawyers have to have had a minimum of 15 jury trials in order to become board-certified. They have to be blind reviewed by their opponents and at least one judge that they've appeared in front of. And then if they pass that and get good references, then ultimately you get to take the board certification exam, which I've done and passed. And then you have to get recertified every 5 years. It's not something you get for life.
Right.
You have to continue to demonstrate your proficiency and active involvement in being a trial lawyer by having to have had at least two more jury trials every 5 years. And again, each time you apply, you have to go through a whole nother background procedure where all the opponents, lawyers that you're up against, get to evaluate you, and you don't get to see what they say. And same with a judge. And then ultimately, You know, you can continue. And I've been recertified, I believe it's 5 times now.
Wow. And so people can call themselves trial attorneys, but they can't call themselves board certified civil trial attorneys unless they've done what you've done.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's one way you know. You can't call yourself board certified. Everyone can call themselves an expert in the law. I mean, it didn't used to be that way, but they made some changes in some of the rules where if you could demonstrate, you know, you did personal injury, you call yourself a personal injury expert. There was a period of time here in Florida, you could not call yourself an expert unless you were board certified.
And that very recently changed,
yes,
right?
Yes, and yeah. It's still the case. If you're not board certified, you can't call yourself board certified. But it is one of the ways that as a consumer can take a look and try to differentiate attorneys that exist. Gosh knows there's plenty of us lawyers out there, and you have to try to figure out which one is right for you. And I would suggest that's one of the things that you can take a look at in terms of the experience. Most of my clients don't want to go to trial, of course, because when you go to trial, you open up every possibility, including the possibility that you don't win the case. So, you know, we do the best we can to try to maximize the value of our clients' cases and minimize the risk to them. But that's certainly something that, you know, you and I have to evaluate in every case before we're going to trial.
Right. And about what percentage of the attorneys are board certified in Florida?
It's less than 2%. There's over 90,000 attorneys, and less than 2% are board certified civil trial lawyers.
And we have two of them in our firm.
We do.
And Lori Robinson as well, who's been a frequent co-host on this show as well. So it is unique to have two board certified civil trial attorneys in a firm that's been helping people since 1955. So that's wonderful. So you're a board certified civil trial attorney. I know you work your butt off on all your cases. I've seen you do that. But you also are a father of 3 great kids. You know, I mean, I remember your kids growing up when they were just very young, but Now they're all adults. Why don't you tell our listeners a little bit about your kids?
Yeah, it's hard to be. You remember them back when my boys, back when they were playing t-ball. Yeah,
that's right.
My oldest is a girl who lives in North Carolina now. She's actually an ICU nurse at one of the big regional trauma centers up in Raleigh, North Carolina. So, you know, she was taken care of actually right when she got out of nursing school at Duke University is right when COVID hit.
Oh, wow.
So the first time she went to work in what looked like a spacesuit.
Goodness.
But she's been up there, and she's now one of the clinical supervisors up there in North Carolina. And then my oldest son, who I'm going to be fortunate enough to ski with this week because I'm just about to head out to do a little bit of skiing out west. And he'll be flying, he's over here on business, and he'll come from San Francisco, and we'll ski in Park City, Utah. So I'll get a chance to see him. He works for a hedge fund over in London. So he did investments. I couldn't talk him into being a lawyer, but
you tried. My
youngest, I was successful. He is, in fact, a lawyer, and he does work in labor and employment law. And he just graduated from law school and took a job over in Orlando. And very proud of him. He actually got the highest score on the Florida bar exam.
That's wonderful.
Over almost 3,000 people that took the bar exam. And actually, he was invited to speak at the Florida Supreme Court. So that was really something for me to go up there and watch him give a speech at the invitation of the justices of the Florida Supreme Court. That was pretty awesome.
A lot of hard work. You taught them how to work hard and how to be successful by working hard.
So I wish I had him to study with.
that would have been a little easier to take the bar exam if you knew the guy was going to get the perfect score.
Well, you remember the bar exam, Matt. Is that not the worst experience of our lives, is waiting for the results of the bar exam?
Yeah, it was. It was quite challenging. Now I guess they do it all by online, and so you know not right away, but very quickly about whether or not you pass or fail. But it's still that. It's kind of like when you're waiting for the jury to come back, you hear the knock on the door and that feeling in your stomach. Even though you know you did a good job at trial, you're still just, oh my goodness, what's the next step?
Yeah, no, technology's improved because my story on my bar exam results was wild. I mean, everyone in my class got their results by mail, and on the day they were supposed to come, I didn't get them. So then they didn't come for days later, and then my friends were kind of ribbing me, saying, hey, there's 2 piles. They send out the pass pile, And then they later send out the fail policy.
Oh, my goodness.
And I knew I didn't fail. I mean, actually, right. The subject matter on the bar, I was very fortunate because I was clerking at our firm. I actually had, you know, two research questions I was working on for Guy Peronick, the then senior partner, that were exactly the question Florida bar exam. They're on the Florida dram shop law. What happens when a bar serves someone and that person gets drunk and causes injury to themselves and others?
And we're going to answer that question.
We are going to answer that question.
During this hour.
Believe me, I could have written for hours on that. I was totally up on the subject. So I figured I'd pass. But to make a long story short, what happened was my bar exam results, they got mislabeled and they were sent to the state of Wisconsin.
Oh, my goodness.
And so ultimately, about 14 days after everybody else in my class knew that they passed, I was talking to the Florida bar. And believe me, even that in of itself was something, because you were instructed not to call the bar about your bar exam results, that they'll get there when they get there. But I was in a situation where I had to go over and take a deposition. They'd already scheduled me thinking I was going to pass and I was going to be taking a, you know, being a deposition with 14 other lawyers on a big construction, a gas explosion case. And so I had to call the bar, and finally they figured out what the problem was, and they did what needed to be done so I could get sworn in and go cover that deposition in Orlando.
Goodness. I had a similar situation with my bar exam. I told somebody that I went to law school with, I said, gosh, if they would only do an essay that had to do with a car accident or something like that, I'd get up on my table and I'd do a jig. And sure enough, the question had to do with a car accident, and a driver was driving somebody else's vehicle, and it was a commercial defendant and all that. I remember my friend.
Yeah, so the danger there is, you know so much because you've just recently been studying those issues. It's a timed exam, so you're trying to make sure you save time to do the other essay. So it was an interesting experience. To this day, people are still struggling with the bar exam. And actually, what's amazing is the passing rates have actually gone down tremendously.
Right. Now I know it. I know it. But my buddy looked over at me and expected me to get up on my table. I'm glad I didn't. I don't think I'd be able to finish the bar exam. But that's Brian Caulfield. I'm Matt Noyes. We are two partners at the law firm of Perrin at Caulfield, Averill, and Noyes, personal injury law firm. Stationed here in Clearwater, but we have offices throughout Tampa Bay. We are the longest established personal injury law firm in Tampa Bay. We started helping people in 1955, and we haven't stopped since. Guy Peronick started the law firm with Frank Muscarella, and then Bob Carroll shortly joined in, and then it just continued to grow and grow and grow. And so we are proud to be able to call ourselves personal injury attorneys. We work hard for our clients. We fight the battle. The insurance companies know that we'll take the case to trial, while other firms may not necessarily have the reputation of taking cases all the way to trial. But we're not here at trial tonight. We are here on the live radio show. So if you have a question, give us a call at 441-3000. That's area code 727-441-3000. Jacqueline and Lori were hosts last week, and they had some really good questions. And so we welcome you all to give us a call as well. In fact, I think Brian and I discussed that for every caller that calls, I think Matt on the other side of the glass would take down their name and address or contact number, and we'll send you out a Peronick Caulfield Averill and Noyes baseball cap to enjoy and to proudly wear. But it is, I can tell from my eyes and my sneezing that it is springtime, and it is spring break, at least coming upon us in the next few weeks. And so Brian Caulfield and I know the dangers that spring break brings to people that are not only enjoying our beautiful weather, but those who also live here and that are seeing the influx of all the tourists coming to Clearwater Beach and the other beaches all around us. So tonight I wanted to take a little bit of time to talk about what to look out for the next coming weeks when spring break comes into play. I mean, we got a lot of beautiful scenery. We got a lot of people driving up and down the roads looking at the beautiful scenery. And unfortunately, that means a lot of distracted driving. And I think a lot, and Brian, you tell our listeners, I mean, distracted driving is one of the biggest causes for car accidents, right?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we're kind of living in the generation where we've seen, you know, cell phones have just become a part of everybody's life. And anyone who's driving, whenever you come up to a light and you look around at the drivers, they're all checking their text messages, looking at their social media. And unfortunately, that doesn't happen just while they're sitting at the light.
Right.
I mean, we've all seen cars that are drifting, you know, around their lane to the left and to the right, and you finally get up near them and you see the reason why. You see the kind of the light shining on their face from their actual text message that they're composing. It's just, it's been an unbelievable change in our society, and it really has had an effect on, unfortunately, it causes a lot of car accidents.
Right. I mean, they're recording videos of them doing TikTok or even Facebook live, and right when they're driving, passengers are, and their drivers are talking to the passengers, and it just causes crashes. It's unfortunate, but it's reality. But one thing that people may not really appreciate is that if you're an owner of a vehicle, could the owner be responsible for the actions of the driver, even if the owner wasn't driving?
Yeah, you know, here in Florida, it's been the law for quite a while now that the owner of the vehicle is primarily liable. So when you lend your car to somebody else and they're driving and they cause an accident, you're going to be responsible for that person's negligence. There are some limitations, but you know, the point is, you know, our law wants to know that there's financial responsibility behind each car that's out there on the roadway. So the primary insurance is going to be that of the owner. So when you're lending your car to someone, you're pretty much lending your insurance policy as well. So
yeah.
You got to be careful, you know, by all means, who you're going to be lending your vehicle to, because that is a source of liability for you.
And so if you have friends coming down or family coming down that aren't spring break, you really got to think twice about whether or not you want them to use your vehicle as they enjoy their time here at spring break.
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. The other thing going on, of course, right now is when you have the influx of tourists, you have the influx of rental cars.
That's right.
And so when you're looking behind you and you see that bright, new, shiny 2023 or 2024 SUV, and, you know, you see a bunch of folks that look like they're from out of state looking forward to going to some of the beautiful beaches, you might think, well, there's a lot of financial responsibility behind that vehicle. It is, after all,
it's Hertz or
national budget, one of these big ones, and you think, oh, well, if that car ever runs into me and the driver of that car causes a serious injury, the company's going to be responsible,
yeah, because,
aren't they, Matt?
Yeah, because, Brian, you just talked about the owner of the vehicle being responsible for the driver of the cars that they allow other people to drive.
Well,
but there's one of the exceptions, and it's a ridiculous exception.
And frankly, it's an outrageous exception,
really,
and people have no idea the danger that Florida citizens are exposed to. Every time you see a rent a car on the road and you think that Hertz or Budget or National stands behind that rent a car if that driver causes an injury, you're wrong. They don't.
That's right.
Because during President Bush's tenure, they got a law passed, and he signed it, that said even though regular owners of vehicles are liable in Florida for negligence caused by the driver of someone they lend the car to, we're going to put in a law in place and change years of existing Florida law and say there's an exception for rental cars. They're not liable for the negligence of their renters. And that puts every Florida citizen at risk, because now you've got to chase after that person who was driving the car. And they might be going back to Germany or England or France or Minnesota or California. And you can certainly sue them here in the state of Florida because they caused an accident here. But the point is, how much financial responsibility will there be? They might not have very good insurance, and you have, you know, a multi-billion dollar business that is completely just basically exonerated itself from having to pay claims. And so it's really an unfortunate kind of quirk in the law that people are shocked to learn when, you know, an auto accident occurs and it's a rented vehicle and it's a severe accident, it leaves Florida citizens seriously injured, maimed, killed by the driver of the rent-a-car vehicle. And then that person who caused the accident gets on an airplane and flies back to their home, and it's up to you to have to chase after them, and, you know, with trying to get compensation. And meanwhile, the big rent-a-car company that's made all that money pays nothing. So it's an amazing change in our law, and it's a terrible change in our law.
And that's what's crazy. I mean, if Aunt Mary allows you to drive your car and doesn't recoup any compensation for allowing you to drive your car, and you cause a crash, Aunt Mary's responsible. But if Hertz, who or any rental company, gets paid, gets money for you to drive their car, and they cause a crash, Hertz isn't responsible. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, especially because the rent-a-car company has the ability to spread whatever loss it sustains over millions of rentals.
Right.
And so it might be a cent or two to each rental that ultimately they have to use to pay claims against the drivers of the rent-a-cars. But, you know, unfortunately, we've done away with that law. And so instead, you're going to probably leave a Florida citizen who could be a paraplegic, quadriplegic, or killed in an accident, and you're going to leave that person with the only recompense they have is to go against the driver of the vehicle, who may have little, you know, coverage, and that coverage could be in a faraway state. So it's right. Just one of those terrible quirks in the law. But there's, you know, Matt, there's a lot of things in Florida auto accident law that when I tell a person something, they're shocked to hear it. And for example, you and I know about the accident report privilege.
Right.
You know, people come into my office and we start talking about liability or who caused the accident, and they tell me, well, don't worry about that, Mr. Caulfield. It's open and shut because the police officer gave the other person a ticket, and I heard them, you know, telling the police officer that they were putting their makeup on and, you know, just didn't notice the car in front of them. Well, a couple things. Number one, you'd be surprised to know that whether a ticket is issued and who gets a ticket is not allowed to be testified to in a court of law in a personal injury case by a police officer or anybody else.
And that is so surprising to many of the people that come into our office.
People are shocked. And then even more, they're more shocked when they hear what's called the accident report privilege. Anything that the other person said to a police officer, even if you overheard them admitting fault, etc., you're not allowed to repeat that. And neither is the police officer. So you can have a situation where what looks like, you know, a pretty straightforward rear-end collision, someone rear-ends you, and they're very sorry at the scene, say, hey, I'm sorry, I was looking at this, I was changing my radio station, I was doing this, totally admitting fault. And then later on, when you sue them for personal injuries, they say, well, no, that's not what happened. You made a sudden and unexpected stop for no reason.
Right.
And you don't get to go and say, well, I'm going to call the police officer in and he's going to testify about what you said. Can't do that. Or I'm going to call the police officer in and say that he gave you a ticket. Can't do that either. So the accident report privilege is one of those things in the law that people don't understand. And one of the reasons why it's so important to get good legal advice on what your rights are after an accident and do so quickly.
Right. It is important to do that because you want to start being educated on what you have to do right at the time of the crash. The investigation needs to be done. Now, if a client came to us and we were able to get the investigator to take a statement of the at-fault driver and they said the same thing that they told the officer, we can use that statement that they gave to our investigator. But we can't use the statement that they gave to the police officer. So that's why it's important to get the investigation going as soon as possible. And Don't wait. Don't wait, but investigate as soon as possible to get those statements that are needed. But we were talking also about the rental car, and every week I always try to at least mention, and it always seems to come up, but it's uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. Brian, you and I agree that uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage is the most important coverage to have for somebody, especially in situations where the owner may be the rental company.
Yeah.
Can you tell our listeners a little bit about uninsured motorists?
Try to give you an example just to try to bring this home. Like, if you're listening to us in your car right now and you're stopped at a light and you look behind you and you see a car, most people that I talk to here in Florida say, well, that car has to be insured because I know that you have to buy mandatory auto insurance in Florida. So if that person ends up rear-ending me, hurting me, and my passengers, I'm not really worried about it. They'll have money to pay. Nothing could be further from the truth. Here in Florida, that vehicle behind you is only required to have personal injury protection, which pays medical benefits to the occupants of that vehicle if there's a crash. And the only other thing that driver is required to have is $10,000 in property damage liability coverage to pay up to $10,000 for the value of your car that they damaged. And so, well, what about all of your medical bills and money for pain and suffering?
Lost wages, all that stuff.
Yeah, you'd be shocked to learn that the minimum financial responsibility laws here in Florida allow people to drive around with no bodily injury liability coverage, meaning they don't have to have any money to pay to you for your personal injuries that they caused to you. No money for pain and suffering, mental anguish, disability, disfigurement, loss of capacity for the enjoyment of life, medical expenses in the past or in the future, and you know, lost wages in the past and the future. People are absolutely shocked when I tell them that.
That's right.
And so the only way you can protect yourself against that, Matt, is how?
Is by having uninsured or underinsured motorist coverage. That's the only car insurance that you in essence can buy that protects you and your family from everybody else's bad driving. Too many clients come in and they have lots of bodily injury liability coverage, meaning they spent lots of money to protect everybody on the road from their potential bad driving, but they spent no money on insurance that protects them and their family. And and uninsured motorist coverage is where they stand in the shoes of the at-fault driver who may have no liability insurance or inadequate liability insurance.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because, to give you a real-life example, this past weekend I met with someone at the ICU at Bayfront that had been injured as a pedestrian. No fault of his own. It's not a question of, you know, was he crossing at the wrong time? He was actually standing on the sidewalk waiting to cross when a car ran a red light at that intersection, caused the vehicles to careen away from the accident, and the vehicle landed on top of him on the sidewalk, severely injured. And then you come to find out that the person that caused the accident only had $50,000 per person, $100,000 per occurrence.
Wow.
And by running the red light, they injured my client, the pedestrian, but they also injured two other drivers that they hit when they ran the red light and went through the intersection. And so now you have all these people vying for very limited insurance coverage, and the medical bills alone are probably going to be 10 times
right.
the amount of the coverage. So the only way our client can protect themselves before they get to the scene of the accident is buy uninsured motorist coverage. If you only remember one thing from tonight's show, we'd like to bang a drum loudly have to check your policy to see that you have uninsured motorist coverage. It's the most important coverage, and if you don't have it, you don't have full coverage, as
That's
people
right.
like to tell me. In fact, you're making the biggest insurance mistake you can make for yourself and your family. Uninsured motorist coverage sticks to you. It goes with your kids to school while they're pedestrians, while you're a pedestrian, while you're a bike rider, while you're in someone else's car. That uninsured motorist coverage that you buy on your own vehicle goes with you to protect you in two events. When the other driver that hits you is uninsured, meaning they have no bodily injury liability coverage. And number two, when the other driver is underinsured. So suppose that they had a $50,000 policy, but your damages were $500,000. Well, then you take the other side's 50 and turn back to your own underinsured motorist coverage to get the rest of your damages. So please, if you remember nothing else from the show tonight, please take a look to see if you have uninsured motorist coverage. And if you don't, please add it. And if you have any questions, you want to, you know, send your deck sheet, your declaration sheet, that sheet that kind of lists your bill that you get every 6 months, Matt and I'd be happy to explain to you whether you have that coverage or not, because we want to meet you before the accident and make sure you have that coverage, rather than the kind of phone call I had to make this afternoon telling someone about limited coverage. So it's just extremely important. UM coverage.
And that's one of the reasons why we do this show. You know, we see our role not only to help you after a crash, but to try to educate you before a crash, so you know exactly what you can do to protect your family. And our willingness to review your car insurance policy, we've been doing that for, gosh, decades, and we're happy to continue to do that even now. But if you have questions in the next 25 minutes about uninsured motorist coverage, car accidents, the owner's responsibility after a car accident, Brian Caulfield and myself are here now to answer those questions. All you got to do is call us at 727-441-3000, and we'll be happy to take your question and address that question and provide you an answer. If you don't want to call in on the show, but you're watching us through Facebook on our firm's Facebook page at Paranick Caulfield Averill & Noyce Injury Lawyers, type in your question right in the comments, and I'll be able to address those for you as well. But we were talking about rental companies owning vehicles. What about Uber? There's a lot of people relying on Uber now to get you to and from. Are Uber drivers, do they get the same protection as the rental companies get?
You know, the good news is you're going to be able to make a claim against Uber. So that's a wonderful thing. And even better, there's some laws in place that make sure there's some good financial responsibility behind the Uber vehicle. So you're almost in better shape if you get hit by Uber than really any other type of vehicle on the road these days, to be honest.
Yeah, you just talked about that. No driver is responsible or required to carry bodily injury liability coverage, except there is a statute that for all ride sharings, not just Uber, but Lyft and anybody else that's ride sharing, they're required to carry bodily injury liability coverage, and it's like $1 million worth of bodily injury liability coverage.
Yeah, no, it's a great law, great forward-thinking law that, you know, basically, you know, protects other people that might be victims of, you know, a driver that, you know, a lot of these people, they're driving a lot, they might be tired, they cause an accident.
Right.
It's good to know that there's financial responsibility behind that vehicle. After all, Uber's making billions.
Right.
So isn't it fair that when one of their driver makes a mistake and severely injures a Florida resident, well, it's nice to know that Uber's going to be able to step up and make a payment toward the injuries their driver caused to someone. So that's one of the good laws. And there's an awful lot of bad ones, but that's certainly one of the good ones.
And that statute protects not only those people that the Uber driver may crash into, but it also protects the passenger or the customer in the Uber vehicle at the time of the crash.
Yeah, so it's certainly some legislation that ended up really helping. I'm not so sure the original intent of the legislation, some people say, was to try to drive Uber or ride-sharing companies out of town.
Right.
And so they started imposing these obligations on them. But the fact of the matter is, it really ended up being a good law.
Right.
And it may have been for the wrong reason, but it's still...
Yeah, taxi drivers don't have that same requirement.
Right. No, so that's the worst, taxi drivers.
I know it. Well, we are still talking about spring break. And one thing that often comes up with spring break, people think about spring break and they think about all these young adults, some 21, some under 21, enjoying spring break with the consumption of some alcohol, sometimes a lot of alcohol, as they enjoy their spring break. Brian, we kind of talked about this on your bar exam, but Florida has a certain law, it's called the dram shop law, that kind of addresses a bar's responsibility to serving customers excessive alcohol. Can you kind of tell our listeners, is the bar responsible if they serve too much alcohol to somebody?
Well, it depends. Only in very, very limited circumstances can you hold the bar responsible. Like you said, there's a dram shop law here. It's codified in a statute, Florida Statute 768.125. And basically it says you can't hold that bar liable unless they willfully and unlawfully served a minor or knowingly served a person habitually addicted to the use of alcohol. Those are the only two ways. So, for example, let's say someone gives a fake ID and you know gets overserved and gets drunk and goes out and causes an accident and kills someone. The question is the bar liable? And the answer is probably not.
Most times, no.
Yeah, the only way you're going to win a case like that is you have to prove they willfully and unlawfully served a minor. And what that means is they knew the person was a minor and served him anyway. Not negligence because they, you know, failed to check the authenticity of the, you know, the fake ID. You have to literally prove that they knew the person, you know, was in fact underage. Now, sometimes you can do that when you're, if you get lucky enough, maybe that person's a, you know, a coworker, so to speak, of the person that they've served, and they know them to be underage because they were in the same high school graduating class. But then, right, of course, you know, you wonder how was that person serving in the first place. So willfully and unlawfully served a minor is one way the bar can be responsible. Knowingly served a person habitually addicted to the use of alcohol basically means you have to prove that there was knowing service, that the person they were serving was an alcoholic and they served him anyway. Those are the only ways. So, you know, basically that statute was enacted to limit the liability of bar owners and restaurant owners, not to create it.
And so let's step away from it being a bar situation, but what if it was like a house party and the adults knowingly served minors at the alcohol at the house party, and those minors, 20-year-olds, went out and drove and they crashed a vehicle. Could the host of that house party be responsible for be responsible for the injuries caused by that crash?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there is a law here in Florida that comes from one of our famous Supreme Court of Florida cases, Bankston versus Brennan, that said there really is no social host liability in Florida. Someone comes over to your house of legal drinking age, comes to your Christmas party, gets themselves drunk, leaves your house, goes and causes a serious accident. You're not going to be liable for it as a social host. But facts are a little bit different than what you outlined.
Right.
You talked about that social host going and serving a minor. So you're breaking the law serving a person that you know to be a minor, and then you're going to have liability.
You have college freshmen and sophomore that are 19, 20 years old. They're not legally allowed to drink alcohol, but they come down here to celebrate their spring break. My son's going to start his first year at college next year, so I know he's going to want a break. But he's not allowed to drink alcohol. And so if he goes to one of those parties and is served by the host, that host can be in trouble.
Absolutely. So, yeah, I mean, you know, certainly if your house is a place that, you know, a lot of teens gather, you know, a lot of parents like that because they like to say, well, you know, we know where the kids are and we know they're, well, you better not be serving them alcohol.
I know.
Because, you know, if they end up, you know, leaving the party, you know, taking an automobile or, you know, tragically, you know, it's not just automobiles. You know, there's wave runners, there's boats, there's, you know, all kinds of, you know, different type of motorized vehicles, four-wheelers, et cetera, that people are driving. And unfortunately, alcohol limits people's inhibitions and limits their judgment, and they go too fast. Their senses are impaired, their ability to physically respond to challenges on the road is impaired, and the unfortunate results are very serious permanent injury and death.
Right.
And so that's, you know, really something. And of course, spring break is well known for the consumption of alcohol.
Right. And you brought it up. It's a great transition for boating accidents. I mean, I don't think we go a year during spring break without reading something about somebody crashing a boat with college kids in it.
Yeah,
it happens too often. And what responsibility, what liability is there?
Well, you know, it's a lot like driving a car. I mean, number one, you can be responsible for an accident if there's no, you know, alcohol involved. I mean, but, you know, there are some different laws that apply when it's on a navigable waterway. Let's say, for example, your wake, you know, injures someone. You know, you can be responsible because you didn't slow your boat down enough and some small boat ended up, you know, capsizing and people were hurt or killed. You can find yourself liable in that situation, and you can certainly find yourself liable, you know, if you're drinking and you're impaired and that leads to a boating accident. I mean, you know, the rules of the road are a little bit different, right? When you're on the boat, things are not as well defined. You know, you have boating type vehicles, whether they're wave runners, jet skis. You know, you've got sailboats. You've got it all, and they're all not necessarily going in a straight line up and down a single channel. There's many, you know, areas where their paths cross, and so people have to be watching all the time. Unfortunately, people make decisions to operate the boat at night, which is probably the most dangerous thing you can do because, you know, look, anytime you're inside of a couple of miles, you're going to have pilings sticking out of the water, many of which are unmarked. And, you know, here in Florida, we've had some very famous, unfortunate, fatal boat accidents where people have even driven up on big rock jetties.
Wow.
Here in Clearwater Beach, down in Miami, there was a case where one of the Miami Marlins pitchers was driving, and unfortunately, at night, they left a party and drove his very high-speed center console boat right up onto a darkened jetty. You can't see at night. There's dark rocks, dark sea, and at high speed, drove that. And so just it's really a setup. So if you don't have radar, you don't have, you know, night vision lighting, the water's not a friendly place to be at night.
Now, we all know we can get DUI if we're driving a car. Can you get a DUI if you're driving a boat?
Yep, you can get it for driving a boat. You can get it for driving a bicycle. Some people say you can get it for riding horseback. I mean, DUI, you can't be, you know, operating on the roadways of our state and be in a situation, you know, where you're impaired.
Right. I was so surprised about the DUI on a bicycle. When I was 17 years old in high school, I was a waiter at Denny's restaurant, and one of the cooks never showed up for his shift, and was like, "Well, I forget what his name was, Joe. Why did Joe show up?" It turned out he was riding his bike to work, and he got pulled over for a DUI on his bicycle. And so at 17, I learned, you know, that you can get a DUI while riding a bicycle as well. But so spring break can be dangerous for drivers and other people on the roads. It can be dangerous on the water. But what about pedestrians? We kind of talked about your case. But about pedestrians that are just enjoying the beach and the other areas, what risk and what rights do they have in order to bring claims should they get hurt if they are hit by a car?
Yeah, well, you know, the law has changed here recently on that, hasn't it? Because really, anytime we bring a negligence claim in Florida, you know, a driver hitting a bicyclist, a pedestrian, you know, or even another motorist, one of the most typical defenses we get is a defense known as comparative negligence. And that defense basically says, well, yeah, maybe I was negligent, but even if I was negligent, you were partially negligent and helped cause the accident. And so that type of defense requires a jury to hear evidence of the occurrence, and then they make a decision whether or not the person who's injured actually caused or contributed to the happening of the accident. And the way they do that is they're asked to take a 100% pie of fault and divide that up. And so, you know, they could say, hey, well, yeah, I mean, the other person was negligent, you know, but, you know, you were negligent too, and therefore you bear X percentage of responsibility, 60-40, 70-30. And so the law has a sweeping change now.
Right. It seemed to be, it made sense. If you were 50% at fault for the crash, you didn't have to pay any other damages except for what you're responsible, 50% of the damages. But the law's changed as of, gosh, was it last year? Almost last year. I can't believe it's almost been a year.
Yeah, no, it's you know, really probably most prominent in what are called premises liability cases. Anytime I have a premises liability case where someone, you know, slips on a foreign object on the floor, whether it be liquid or solid, and you're at a store or whatever, and you're trying to make a claim against the store for failing to, you know, maintain a, you know, safe premises, you are encountering a defense coming back against you. Well, wait a minute. If this condition was so open and obvious that we should have seen and corrected it, then it was so open and obvious that you should have seen it and avoided it. And so, therefore, it really is another way of saying, hey, watch where you're going.
Right.
And so, if a jury were to find that you were more than 50% at fault, let's say they said, okay, yeah, you know, okay, they did leave that coffee grinds on the floor. Evidence has shown longer than it should have been there. But heck, it's a white floor in a big dark area of coffee grounds. You should have been looking better, Matt. So I'm going to find you 55% at fault for this slip and fall accident. And I'm going to find the store 45%. What happens?
Well, now the law says that even though you're 45% at fault, you don't have to pay a penny of the damages that you may have caused. The law has changed in such a way where now that if the plaintiff is more than 50% at fault for their injuries, the other person gets to escape responsibility for their negligence.
If you think about it, the legislature has literally given permission for someone to be negligent and injure you, and they don't owe you the percentage of fault that they caused.
Right.
Whereas the law, since I believe it's 1973, had been each party pays in accordance with their percentage of fault. So if you did have an accident that was partially your fault and partially the other side's fault, well then, you know, you got your damages reduced by your own percentage of fault, but you still made a recovery for the at-fault party's percentage.
Right.
Not anymore, not if it's above 50%, you now get nothing. So if the other side, you know, gets a jury to agree you were more than 50% at fault,
They escape.
They owe absolutely nothing, even though the jury says they're 45% at fault and there's a $100,000 award. What the jury doesn't know is you're actually giving that person nothing, because under this new law, you don't make a recovery in that circumstance. So another crazy change to the law that when I explain it to them, they're just scratching their head and saying, well, why would our legislature do that to us? Why would they allow a negligent party to get off from paying their percentage of fault when that's been the rule in Florida for decades?
I know.
What was the compelling reason to change that rule to make people less responsible for their conduct?
Big lobbying groups for the big box stores and such like that.
And insurance companies.
And insurance companies. Well, you have been listening to Brian Caulfield and myself, Matthew Noyce. We are two partners at the law firm of Perenick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce. We proudly provide this show every Tuesday from 5 until 6. But I'm going to steal something from the Kelly Kelly Show that's on every Monday from 5 until 6. The firm also helps sponsor the Kelly Kelly Show. And Doug Kelly always has a little spiel about this or that. And so I get to do that to Brian. So we may find out a little bit more about Brian through these questions. So I'm going to ask you two things, and you just tell me which one, okay? Brian, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Music stations or talk radio stations?
Talk radio.
I knew that answer. Motorcycle or jet ski?
Jet ski or wave runner.
All right. This one I didn't know. Mountain vacation or beach vacation?
Gosh, that's a toss-up depending on the time of year, because I like them both.
You are going to a ski vacation.
Going to a ski vacation, so.
Yeah, all right, I'll give you that. Pizza or barbecue?
You ask me during the winter, I'm going to say, you know.
That's right. During the summer, you want to go up to the mountains.
I heard you say barbecue. That's an easy one.
I know.
Know that. It seems like people make fun of me because all I do is eat barbecue, they say, for lunch.
That's right.
And when I go out of town, a lot of times when I'm in a different city, I'll search on Yelp, you know, what's their best bar? Like, I just went to Austin, Texas. So, of course, I had to make the rounds at the different barbecue places in Austin.
Baseball or football?
Football. Not even close.
I still like you. when you're on vacation, sitting at the pool or doing activities?
You'll never find me sitting at a pool. number one, you know, I have very fair skin, so I'm not someone that can sit out there and burn. And number two, I must be moving. My mom always used to say that about me. You know, ever since I was a kid, I always had to be moving.
Yes.
So I'm not someone that you'll see laying on the beach. And maybe that's not a good trait. Maybe I should relax more, but I always got to be moving.
I think it's a great trait because that's what I would fall under myself too. And I've worked with you. We've done cases together, so I know you're always moving. So I can totally understand that one. Cable TV or streaming?
Interesting question. You know, I think I'm now moving over to streaming.
Okay.
It had been cable TV for so long, but you know, now I'm starting to kind of see the virtues of these streaming channels and starting to watch a lot of them.
Oh, cool. I'm still the cable guy, sorry. And last, onion rings or French fries?
Nothing better than good onion rings.
Amen.
Give me the kind of like, not the big fat ones, but kind of the stringy ones that you get up in New England.
Onion strings or something like that.
Onion straws. Onion strings even better.
Yeah. Well, now you know a little bit more about Brian Caulfield. We told our staff that they should listen so they can see if they knew all those answers as well. But you have been listening to FLA Law on the radio. We are, as I said, we are here every Tuesday from 5 until 6 o'clock in the evening, here to answer questions that you have regarding our areas of law or our guest area of law. Next week, we have a fan favorite. Michelle Perez is coming back to be a guest. She is an immigration attorney that has appeared on our show many times. In fact, she started out as a receptionist in our office. And so we are all proud to see how good she's done. So we ask you to tune in next week as well to hear Michelle Perez and have your immigration questions ready. But before we go, we got about a minute left. Brian, what last bit of tad information would you list to give our listeners? I know we talked about UM, but what else would you tell them to do?
Well, you know, I think I'm going to take the remaining time to repeat UM because nothing's more important, really. You've got to buy UM. It protects yourself. It protects your family members wherever they go, whether they're in someone else's car. And if you don't have uninsured motorist coverage, you're making the biggest insurance mistake. Matt and I are going to meet you after an accident. It's going to be a very difficult time, and the more seriously injured you are, the more you need UM coverage. Please buy UM coverage.
That's right. And so if you have questions when it's not this time during the show, just give our office a call. It's Paranick, Caulfield, Averill, and Noyce at 727-796-8282 or visit us at voiceoftheinjured.com. We'll see you next week, but in the meantime, drive safely and watch out for those who don't. Take care.